This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Oh boy, welcome. Even more welcome than ever. 4 minutes after 12, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. Although I am currently struggling with a mystery of my own. I wonder what is more egregious. Someone's just shared that footage of Dominic Raab revealing that he hadn't actually sat down and read the Good Friday Agreement after becoming Secretary of State for Brexit. I think, if memory serves, it's about 47 pages long. Forgive me if I've got that wrong. Or Jacob Rees-Mogg, an alumnus of Eton College, where every single student was tested for coronavirus last week, telling you that if you want a test for your children, you should stop your endless carping. And if that's not a moment at which you begin to wonder whether this geezer actually gives a hoot about you and yours, then frankly, I don't know what is. What's that you said, J-Dog? Your school, every single kid at your old school got tested, but if we want our kids to be tested, we should stop our endless carping. Right, you are, boss. Tug, forelock, doff cap, vote Rees-Mogg. 5 minutes after 12 is the time, and it is Mystery Hour upon us now. So, hit the numbers now, you will get through. If you have a question which needs an answer, a mystery which needs a solution, a enigma that needs unravelling, then this is your opportunity to get it. 0345 60 60 973. It was conceived, this feature, for two reasons. Forgive me if you've heard this one before. Forgive me repeatedly if you've heard this many, 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 many times. It was conceived partly because whenever there is an election and we are compelled not to talk about politics, it's always quite fun to have something in your back pocket that you can do instead. That's why this, despite having a rather weekendy feel to it, that's why this feature unfolds on a Thursday. But the second reason, quite seriously, is one that I find myself thinking about more and more as my own children get older and the massive changes in not just what you might describe as choices about our education system, but the inevitability of some of these changes to our education system. So younger listeners, and indeed all of my colleagues fall into this category, can barely conceive of a world without the internet. It is almost impossible for them to imagine a world without the internet. The only world they have ever lived in has this astonishing technology, for good or for ill, at its fingertips. And what's the point in learning anything, really? What's the point in learning the six wives of Henry VIII, for example, when you can have it in front of you quicker, arguably, than it takes you to say it out loud? Does anyone want to have a go? Do you know, I wouldn't trust myself at the moment to get it absolutely right. I've got my divorce beheaded, died divorce beheaded, survived off pat, but you're looking at Catherine of Aragon. That's where I get confused. Catherine of Aragon, Anne Boleyn. Then Jane Seymour outlive him, or was she the one that gave him Edward and then passed away? I'm glad we've opened up this particular window of expertise. The point being, of course, that you don't need to know stuff anymore. The internet robs us all, really, of the pleasure of knowledge, and that's fine. It's the nature of the beast. But it's still good to know stuff, which is why the second question I will ask you after you come on the programme and provide an answer to a question that somebody else has asked, the second question I will ask you would be, what are your qualifications? By which I don't mean, did you get a bag of gymnastics award for, or indeed pass your cycling proficiency at Stourport Police Station in 1985? I mean, how do you know that thing what you just told us you know? How do you know that? And you will say to me, anything from, I saw it on the telly last night, James, right through to, I have a PhD, I have a doctorate in precisely this very, very esoteric field of academic research. The point being, it doesn't matter what your qualification is. I only ask to establish your bona fides, the likelihood of you being right. And if your qualifications for answering the question that you answer are breathtakingly appropriate, well, wait, you wait and see what happens. But I'll tell you for nothing, it's unspeakably exciting. 1208. Let's crack on. Matt is in Reading. Matt, question or answer?
I have a question, please.
Carry on, Matt.
I was wondering where the tradition of smashing a bottle of champagne against the hull of a boat before it makes its maiden voyage comes from.
I'd be astonished if we haven't done that before, but I can't.
I thought it may have been done before, actually.
I can't remember, which is, frankly, the only criteria we use. Just a quick apology. The Good Friday Agreement is 35 pages. My thanks to Thomas McGarvey for reminding me of that. But back to you. I have no idea, actually. So if we have done it before, I've forgotten, which means you get on the list. Good work. Are you planning on launching anything later today? I mean, how urgent is this inquiry?
No, I was actually watching a movie with my daughter, and it happened in the movie, and my daughter said, oh, why do they do that? And I said, it's good luck. And then I thought, that's not a proper answer, though. I need a James O'Brien answer.
Oh, hang on a minute. I hope you told your daughter to stop her endless carping. Seeking facts, knowledge and evidence, endless carping. And actually, that was, I forgot that. It was back in the mists of time when we started doing this. We often used to cite parents in pursuit of omniscience to just postpone that moment when your children realise that you don't know anything more than anybody else does. And they cling on for a little longer to the idea that daddy knows the answers to every question. Let's help Matt retain that superior status for just a few moments more. Where does that come from? The old smashing of the bottle on the hull of the boat. Martin's in Solihull. Martin, question or answer?
Question. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi. Many outdoor clothing products are labelled as breathable. They allow moisture to pass in one direction through them, so your sweat goes out, but the rainwater doesn't get in. You can also get paints that are labelled as breathable.
Yeah.
But unlike a material, which can have an inside and an outside, you just paint the paint on. So how does the paint know to let moisture out from the timber you've put it on, but not to let it from the rainwater that's landing on it?
Why would it be different from cloth?
Well, with cloth, you can make it with an inside and an outside.
Yeah, but
it's... paint just comes out of the tin.
Right.
There isn't an inside or an outside to the paint.
But it'll be the molecular structure of the paint that... I mean, you've led me into a field about which I know even less than all the other fields I routinely find myself exploring on this programme, Martin, but... So you've got something called breathable. Is all paint not breathable?
I don't think so, no, because some paints can trap moisture in and that causes a problem. So there's many different types of
paint. But why would you want a paint that traps moisture in? I can't see... I mean, unless you wanted something waterproof, in which case you'd use a waterproof paint. Usually all paint would be breathable because of the molecular structure of the paint, unless you add something rubbery or galvanised that makes it waterproof. I really am chancing my arm here, Martin, I've got to tell you, mate. Well, you say that. It might turn out to be true. It's my career, that is, right there. How does breathable paint work is the question, really.
Yes.
Not how does the paint know, because that's...
Yeah.
It's not Doctor Who, mate. We haven't got sentient paint on the agenda. So breathable paint, what's going on? That's the question we'll get you an answer.
That's great, yeah.
Okay, nice one. Thank you, Martin. I don't know. I think the answer might be the other way around, as in paint is generally breathable, but you can get special water. I don't know. Why am I even talking? Seriously. Well, obviously it's a radio show. It'd be a bit weird if I didn't. But why am I talking in that particular field? 12:12 is the time. 0345 606 0973 is the number. Richard's in Worthing. Richard, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Richard. You sound a bit beleaguered. Are you having a tough day?
Well, aren't we having a tough life?
It's not the attitude. Stop your endless carping. Stop your endless carping and cheer the flip up, will you? Carry on.
I should stop my carping.
Thank
well, hopefully
you.
This is a really easily answerable question. I've always wanted to know...
Yes.
...if commercial airliners have horns.
As in beep, beep. I love that question. So, I mean... You'd be unlikely to need one, wouldn't you? If there was a commercial airliner heading towards you, you'd probably notice without the use of a horn. No?
James, not for in the air,
Richard.
Necessarily. I was thinking more
on
the ground.
I know you. I wasn't in the air, you prune. Of course, on the ground, I think you'd be more likely to notice it coming towards you on the ground than you would if it was flying towards you through the air, wouldn't you?
I'm
just walking around, minding your own business, walking around Heathrow, and then beep, beep. Oh, my God, I nearly got hit by a 747. Thank God for that plane horn.
That's true. That's good carping.
All right. We shall find. Do planes have horns or some other means of alerting pedestrians in the, what's it called? Airside pedestrians, that there is an enormous, whopping great plane coming to it. Before you go, Richard, just do the sound once more, would you?
I'm going with
You've got a gift there, Rich. Seriously, a gift that right until this moment in your life has not been properly recognised. John's in Teddington. John, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on.
When I come home from the supermarket and I've got a few bottle of beers and I want to drink one quick, I put some in the freezer compartment.
Yes.
Now, I'm getting older and sometimes I forget to take them out and...
Been there, John. We've all been there.
And they freeze solid.
Yes.
Now, when I take them out, I let them thaw And then when I pop them open after they've thawed, they are way less fizzy than what they should be. Where has that gas gone? Why are they less fizzy? It's all stayed in the bowl.
Yeah, you'd think so. I thought you were going down a different route, because sometimes if you leave them in, the beer expands and pushes the lid off, doesn't it?
Yeah, I get that, because it, you know, that expands because it's frozen. But
you're going for, why is it so much noticeably less fizzy after it's frozen and thawed again?
Yeah, surely the gas is still inside the bottle and then in the liquid. Where's it going?
Yeah, and there's not a particularly resonant emission of gas when you lift the lid off the beer, is there? It's not like you it goes boom.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to make that noise, though, like your previous...
No, I mean, frankly, I don't think anyone could scale those dizzy heights of live sound effects, live radio sound. BBC used to have entire departments dedicated to producing that sort of magic, like that sort of audio magic on the wireless. Thank you, John. I'll try and find... Yeah, he's right, you know. If you put a bottle of beer, bottle of gear, in the freezer and forget about it, and then you open it, so first thing you do is you go, oh, excellent, it hasn't expanded and pushed the lid off. This one's still drinkable. So you take it out of the freezer, you leave it on the side in the kitchen for a couple of hours, it starts melting, and you resist the urge to open it too early because you don't want to have a still, you know, little bit of beer and then a big lump of frozen beer, and you finally get it to a point where it is pourable. You pour the whole bottle into a glass, or perhaps you drink from the neck, and it is noticeably less fizzy. Why is that, given that the bottle is, we presume, airtight? 12:15 is the time.
This is LBC Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
18 minutes after 12, you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we continue to solve mysteries at a rate of knots. On the agenda today, what's the origin of smashing a bottle of champers on the side, on the hull of a boat at launch? How does breathable paint work? Do planes have horns? That's probably my favourite at the moment. And when your beer freezes and then defrosts, why is it considerably less fizzy than it was before it froze? 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. And that should have given you, if you're new to this, that should have given you a fairly broad indication of just how wide the criteria are for this. Actually, no, there's nothing very clever there, really. Is a breathable paint probably quite clever? So you can ask anything you want. The only thing we usually guard against, we're careful about if it's really, really obvious, like baby pigeons or white dog poo, then don't waste your time getting in touch, because it won't get on. Other than that, I used to hate questions about motoring. I largely still do. So they're unlikely to get on. In fact, no, we'll leave that rule in place. God knows, we need some semblance of maturity attached to proceedings. So don't ask me questions about motoring. The worst question I ever got asked on Mystery Hour, that's quite a big claim, actually, but one of the worst questions I ever got asked involved a roundabout with an exit that you weren't allowed to drive up, and the caller wanted to know what was at the end of that exit. Now, you probably are thinking, oh, a bit previous there, James, could have been really interesting, could have been a secret nuclear testing facility or something like that. You might be right. But that was the reason why I took against motoring-based questions, on the grounds that no one else was going to be interested in the answer to that question, because no one else drove around that roundabout every day. To be fair, this was back in the days when we had probably only about 250,000 weekly listeners to the programme, and we've now increased that figure by a factor of about 1 million. So possibly there would have been thousands of people driving daily around that roundabout. Shall I move on? All right. 20 after 12. Steve's in Nottingham. Steve, question or answer?
Another question, I'm afraid.
What do you mean, I'm afraid? Where would we be without questions? There would be no answers, Grasshopper, without questions. Go on.
Okay, I was chatting with my friend Ian last night, and yeah, we couldn't decide what makes a piece of music classical. So what constitutes classical music? And immediately you would assume it was written between certain dates.
No.
There's such a thing as modern classical music.
Yeah, no, of course there is, yeah.
And also classical music that isn't performed by an orchestra. So what parameters?
Well, it can't be instrument-based either, can it? Because if you said if it's on violins, then you'd rule out, you know, every folk group with a fiddle would suddenly become classical.
Absolutely. Or guitar, even. Classical guitar.
Classical guitar? What? So, yeah. It'd be the tempo? No, it couldn't even be the tempo. It's a really good question.
So what actually qualifies something as classical music?
Well, I like it. Let's find out. What is the criteria by which a piece of music becomes classical? There may not be one. It may just be one of those things. I mean, Steve might be the first. Steve and his friend. It's quite an interesting conversation to be having late at night, Steve. What sort of time was it?
Half past 10 last night.
Oh, okay. Any munchies involved in that one? 21 minutes after 12 is the time. Moving swiftly on. Matt's in Worthing. Matt, question or answer?
It's an answer, James, to the breathable paint one.
Carry on, Matt.
Okay, right. So, breathable paint, essentially, is quite simple. It would have less vinyl or acrylic in it.
Yes, that's what I said. I said galvanised or rubber or something. Like, yeah, get in. Yeah. I did a decorating question. Carry on.
You're pretty much right. I mean, so basically, if you had a bare plaster room, you know, you put a mist coat on, you would use the cheapest of chips emulsion or an emulsion that doesn't have any vinyl or acrylic in. And if, say, you put like vinyl silicone, which would have a really high content of vinyl straight on the plaster, you could come back the next day and it would all be peeling off the walls because the moisture would be trying to escape from the plaster and it would push it all off.
Oh.
And also you have a thing called mineral paints, which are for like lime plaster for older buildings.
Yes.
You don't want to use a modern paint on those because they have a higher acrylic content in them.
Right.
Although they do say breathable, they're breathable to a point, but not as breathable as a mineral paint, because basically a mineral paint doesn't have those vinyls and acrylics in them.
I like it. No, it makes perfect sense, which is why it has that chalky finish, that limey finish to it.
Exactly, yeah. So really, it's like the shinier the paint, probably the more vinyl.
The more vinyl it's got in it. So gloss, high vinyl, emulsion, matte, low vinyl.
That's it, yeah. Although like a vinyl matte obviously has vinyl in.
Vinyl matte. When would I want a really waterproof paint? And don't say on a boat.
Well, you know, obviously, like, exterior woodwork.
Well, plastic and metal would be fine, wouldn't it? Oh, exterior woodwork, so it actually becomes a barrier against water getting into the wood rather than...
Yeah, I mean, ideally, you want it to be, like, render and stuff like that to be breathable, plaster. So if, like, you had a problem with a basement where there'd been water coming in or you had damp, you want to get all that, like, modern paint off the walls, strip it back, and then get to the
Get it tanked if you can afford it, but if you can't get it tanked, then get some really good paint in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a boring one, but, you know, I'm a decorator.
I didn't need to ask you that. That was your quality. I like that. So the question was the wrong way around. Paint is generally porous or water will pass through it, but the more vinyl that you add, then the more potentially waterproof it becomes.
Absolutely.
Round of applause for Matt the decorator. You're working in Worthing in West Sussex. Yeah, I've got, so my friends Gary and Sean, who are both decorators, are going to be spitting nails about the fact that you got on with this one.
Yeah, a lot of decorators out there will be, you know.
A lot of us have on the radio whistling while they work. So well done you for leading the field. Stephen's in St Albans. Stephen, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
Do commercial airliners have a horn?
Oh, yeah.
And the answer is yes.
Get in. This is a moment. Everyone, no, hang on. Let's just all take a moment to reflect upon one of the finest answers ever in the history of Mystria. Oh, go on, tell me more.
So it's not used for getting attention of other aircraft or anything like that. It's not loud enough. It's used for getting the attention of the ground crew, so the engineers and handlers and that on the ground. It's a tiny little horn on the nose of the aircraft. And I suppose it's more like a squeaking duck.
And your qualifications are?
Aircraft engineer.
Could you make the noise for us? Would you mind?
Your previous caller, I think, did a wonderful
noise. No, that was rubbish. That was nothing like a squeaking duck, you lying person.
Well, it's more like a...
Sorry, I didn't... My earphones went a bit fun. Do it again.
It's more like a...
So the fellow who asked the question was going much more for a whack whack.
Yeah, that's more like a duck. No, it's a bit of a distortion into it. Yeah, and it's not very loud.
And it is literally, in case there's a poor old baggage handler there who's about to get hit up the proverbials by.
No. So the aircraft, as the aircraft arrives on stand, so it'll be met by an engineer or a ground crew.
Yeah,
And they usually plug their headset in. But if they're not there or the flight crew want their attention quickly, they'll hit the horn so that the people walking around can hear them, go and plug their headset in and get their attention to talk to them rather than get them out of the way.
Got you. Okay, so it's oi over here type horn rather than get out, get in the back of the van type.
Absolutely.
A fantastic answer. Round of applause for Steve. And that is one of my all-time faves. Matt's in Rotherham. Matt, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on. I've just seen... Go on, carry on.
Yeah, I know. Thank you for letting me on, but it's been on my mind.
All right.
Why are car number plates white at the front when they're yellow at the back?
Now, I have a new colleague working with me today, a colleague who hasn't actually ever done Mystery Hour before. And whether this is her fault or not, I know she's going to get the blame for it, because not only have we done this question relatively recently, I think we've done it in the last two. I've only been back. When did I get back from holiday, Matt? Was it this week or last week?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
It was this week.
Yeah. I think we did this in the last Mystery Hour. I think we did it 3 weeks ago.
Oh, I was busy then. Sorry.
No, it's not your fault. I'm just pointing out how important it is for senior producers to keep a very close eye on proceedings, when, especially when we have new colleagues doing their level best to keep the Mystery Hour ship afloat. The answer, Matt, is to do with being able to work out whether the vehicle in front of you is coming towards you or not.
Surely there's the easier way of working that out, whether you're seeing the front of a vehicle or the back of a vehicle.
But you can't, can you, in the dark?
Or whether you're seeing headlights or red lights.
Yeah, that is also relevant, but not completely foolproof. In fact, either I'm having a really, really serious case of déjà vu, or I had an almost identical exchange with the person who asked the question 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
It is
yellow at the back, James, because
it's less reflective.
Exactly. So the question actually was, why aren't they yellow at the front if yellow is...
So that you know it's the front, if it's coming towards you.
You know when there's a car coming towards you.
Well, you might say that, but when's the last time you got hit by a car?
Actually, that's true. You're right. It works.
So you see? So if it ain't broke, Matt, don't fix it.
Spot on.
A round of applause for me. Steve's in Wakefield. Steve, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
It's a classical music one.
Oh, good. Carry on.
Unfortunately, it's not a simple answer, but I
want to. No, I didn't think it would be.
One answer is that its music tends to be spelled with a capital C, like conservative. Sorry, I said that word. The period is about 1730 to about 1820, something like that.
It's, okay.
Yeah, there are no clear boundaries. So Mozart, Beethoven, Haydn.
So it would be like a period, the classical period. You can't put an exact period on it.
In music history, we talk about the Baroque period. When Bach was around, then the classical, then the romantic, when people like Tchaikovsky and Liszt were around, etc., etc. But the more complicated answer is...
Small c,
it's a generic thing. It's a difficult question to answer, but you got two types of music in theory, classical and popular, or some people call classical unpopular, which is one of my... friends does it. Classical, if you think about classical as in the classics, Greek, Roman, obviously it doesn't mean music from that period, but it talks about proportion, structure, sort of correctness, as it were. That doesn't mean to say that other music isn't like that, but
it obeys it. So what would Schoenberg be then, or John Cage?
I would call those art music.
Would you?
Because that's the other term that is bandied around.
Right.
It's probably a... But it, even then, it's got a classist angle to it, because why isn't Elton John art music?
Well, I was about to say, are there any examples of pieces of music that perhaps challenge your distinctions, or challenge the distinctions?
Loads. I mean, West Side Story, is that an opera?
Perfect example.
Or a musical,
qualifications, Steve? I'm a little late for the news.
I'm a senior lecturer, or sometimes called associate professor in music at University of Leeds.
Oh, fantastic. Is Breton Hall still open in where you are?
It's funny you ask that. No, I started there, actually.
I thought you might have done. Small world, isn't it? There's Yorkshire Sculpture Park now as well.
Absolutely. It's about 10, 15 minutes from where I live.
Well, I urge everybody to visit it if they can. It's
it
a beautiful
was absorbed,
spot.
Shall we say?
Into the bigger university. Right, you are.
Yes, in 2001. But managed to keep my job. So.
Good man. Round of applause for Steve. 12:30 is the time. Thomas Watts has the headlines.
Help. Eligibility criteria apply.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It's 12:34. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I mean, every day you find yourself thinking, what next? So the Times has just reported that Ian Duncan Smith has told Joe Biden to tackle the rioting in America and not to lecture the UK. Who's going to tell Ian Duncan Smith that Joe Biden's not the president? Can we say, let's not make a big deal out of it. Can you just send him an email or something? Because he's going to embarrass himself if he carries on doing this stuff. Ian Duncan Smith telling Joe Biden to tackle rioting in America. He's not the president, Ian. He's the Democratic candidate. There's an election in November, mate. God, honestly, it'd be like asking Keir Starmer to sort out the coronavirus crisis. I can see the temptation, frankly. It's not as if he could do any worse than your fella. But, mate, you can't go around telling people who aren't in charge to sort out the stuff that they're not in charge of. It makes us look stupid on the world stage. In fact, instead of suggesting that Joe Biden should fix things in a country he doesn't govern, maybe you could just go and read the Good Friday Agreement and then you'd understand why what Joe Biden has said about it is absolutely accurate. Oh, dear. And, of course, speaking of people who haven't read the Good Friday Agreement, or if they have failed completely to understand it, I see Jacob Rees-Mogg coming in for some quite widespread criticism after suggesting that you should just shut up and suck it up if you want a test for your children, while his old school managed to test every single student returning last week. If you do get the chance to interview him, or even if you just bump into him, just ask him why. Why do you think Eton tested every pupil if complaining that you can't get a test is endless carping? Roddy is in Sevenoaks. Roddy, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Roddy.
My question is, what is the origin of the British military salute?
That's a nice question. Specifically, I mean, what British? Specifically British or just saluting in general?
Well, I imagine a lot of Western militaries have very similar salutes, but it's presumably something that we might have led the way in developing or influencing.
That's bold. I'd have thought the Romans. I just lent towards...
Well, the Romans, I've seen movies, of course. Yes. The Romans seem to do the hand in the air rather than touching a cap or a hat.
Yes.
So it's the idea of actually raising the hand to touch the cap in a very smart way.
I shall definitely put the question on the board. Would you allow me to essay an answer?
Of course.
I fear it may undermine your hopes or beliefs that it would be something peculiar to Britain, but of course I could be wrong. I think that it was linked to the lifting of visors.
Okay, that's interesting. I actually have, this is bothering me particularly, yes, because one of your favourite expressions is doff cap, tug forelock, and I wondered if it might have had some connection to that type of activity.
Probably ultimately it might do, lifting of the cap, raising of the visor, saluting of a superior officer, or indeed a flag or an anthem. But I'll put it on the board, but I just in the mists of my memory, that lifting of the visor, and that would probably involve chivalry and sort of post-Norman type, so French rather than English, but we shall find out for you. You weren't a military man yourself.
Not at all, no.
So, I mean, that doesn't mean you'd know if you were, but it's the last thing you're supposed to do on the parade ground is start asking questions of the regimental sergeant major. Lovely question, Roddy. The origin of the British military salute and stroke or... military salutes in general. 0345 6060 973. Paul's in Swansea. Paul, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Paul.
It's the champagne one.
Oh, yes. Why do we smash a bottle of perfectly good champagne on the hull of a boat?
It was to give it good luck.
Yes.
I think Queen Victoria was the first one to use champagne because if it's a ship had a royal name in it, she thought champagne would be best fitted.
Really?
And for Royal Navy ships, always champagne.
So prior to Queen Victoria, it never happened?
No. Prior to Queen Victoria, they used goblets filled with wine, and they smashed a goblet against the ship. But they launched so many ships, it got too expensive.
Right.
So they decided on champagne.
Okay.
And the Americans, during Prohibition... they filled an empty water bottle, empty boat with water, and smashed it against the ship.
I don't know. I mean, what are your qualifications first?
I read this in my local maritime museum about 6 months ago. I thought, that's interesting.
And do we know the first ship? The first one that in the reign of Queen Victoria,
I'd be guessing now, James.
So you go back in time, you go back thousands of years. They do some good luck ceremony, or they'd invoke the flipping Norse gods or something like that before they launched a ship. So that makes sense. That's like leaving a glass of sherry out for Father Christmas, isn't it? You throw a glass of wine at the ship. And then it evolved in different parts. And here we use a bottle of champagne because it's a mark of class and respect.
And the Vikings, when they launched their ships, they would sacrifice a slave.
Would they really?
Yeah.
Cool.
And really? Other people, then that they probably sacrifice an ox.
I'd rather use the champagne.
But Queen Victoria was the first to use champagne.
Ah, well, if you saw it in your local museum, then that's good enough for me.
It was my local maritime museum. And I love the place. It's brilliant.
What's it called? Give it a plug. Probably needs all the help it can get at the moment.
It's Swansea Maritime Museum in the marina in Swansea.
So when Paul in Swansea rang up to tell me about his local maritime museum, I could perhaps have worked out that he would be talking about Swansea Maritime Museum. I don't know why. I thought it might be in Penarth. Anyway, that was nowhere near. That's nearer Cardiff than Swansea. Round of applause for Paul, please. Nice answer. We like that. Stephen's in Wandsworth. Stephen, question or answer?
Good afternoon, James. It's a question.
Carry on.
Why, for birthdays, Christmases, etc., do we celebrate with cake? When did that start?
Ah, well, I presume that it is a bit like Pancake Day. It's the quality, the historical quality of the ingredients. So eggs and, mm-hmm. and eggs, butter, flour, milk, it's all the most expensive things you have in your larder. So the short answer is because cake is delicious. And then you say, well, why don't you have it every day? And I say, because it's expensive, and there's your answer. So you have it on special occasions.
I guess that makes sense.
Don't you think?
It makes sense, but I just...
Well, I've got no qualifications apart from good old-fashioned British common sense, so I shall...
if you've got that, then you're way ahead of most of us.
So stop your endless carping. So I shall...
let me carp away.
I shall put birthday cakes on the list, because there might be... I mean, funnily enough, given that the last fellow mentioned Queen Victoria, it's this, because Prince Albert's often credited with coming up with a Christmas card, isn't it? So there might be a more specific... Rather than something that just sort of evolved into common usage, there might be a specific source of the tradition. I shall find out.
I do hope so. So do I now,
Steve. Now you've piqued my interest. Why do we have birthday cakes? Why do we have cakes on our birthdays? 03456060973. 12:42 is the time. This is rather jolly this week, isn't it? So, do planes have horns? Hell yes, they do. Why does defrosted frozen beer? Why is it less fizzy than pre-frozen beer? Classical music question was lovely. White and yellow cars, I did. The origin of the military salute. The rationale behind birthday cakes or birthdays being marked with a cake. We've done the champagne boat. We've done breathable paint. We're going rather well this week. Russell's in Perth in Scotland. Russell, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Russell.
What is the origin of the phrase, by the way, by the way?
By the way. What do you mean, by the way?
Well, it's pretty commonly used, isn't it?
I mean,
James is on at 10, by the way, not 7. But what's the origin? Where did that come from?
Well,
I know what it means, but...
Well, if you were walking up a road, then the main bit of business is the road, right?
Uh-huh.
But something... In addition to the main bit of business, something alongside the road is...
By the way.
So I'm telling you a story about X, but I think you might be mildly interested in Y, which is vaguely relevant to X. So I say, oh, X, 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 by the way, Y. No?
Maybe. Yeah, okay.
Well, I'm
happy to give you a round of applause.
I don't want to take
maybe
a round. I mean,
a steward's inquiry there.
Well, we won't need a steward's inquiry because I haven't awarded myself the round of applause yet. But if you see it as something, if you see it as introducing a new topic not directly relevant to the topic previously under discussion, then that's mm-hmm. by the way. And to think of it in literal or physical terms, it would be I'm walking along the road. The blackberries are by the way.
I like it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think that's strong. I mean, I don't have the qualifications to award myself a round of applause, but I'm usually quite strong on wordy stuff.
If there's anybody who has a little extra to add, maybe you could invite them to it.
Well, that's what I'll do, by the way.
By the way, James.
By the way. And by the way, Russell, you're more than welcome. I shall speak to you soon. Mind how you go. 12:44. Is that squeezing one more quickly? Yeah, why not? Chris is in Henfield. Chris, question or answer?
An answer, James.
Oh, yes. Carry on.
Right, OK, the beer one.
Yes.
OK. So my view is there's three scenarios.
I've come to you quickly. I thought this would be an easy one. I'll come back to you after the break. All right, I'm going to hit this break on time if it kills me. Chris, stay where you are. It's 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Localised lockdowns are spreading and there's talk of curfews from 10 p.m. Anything to avoid another national lockdown.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
12:48 is the time. 7 hours a week Chris Grayling is doing for this big ports company that's paying him £100,000 per year. So about 275 quid an hour. Interesting, isn't it, how things unfold? Anyway, stop your endless carping and crack on with Mystery Hour. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. Richard is in Aylesbury. Richard, question or answer?
Inquiry, unfortunately.
Right, Stuart's inquiry. I'll be the judge of that, pal. Go on, do your worst.
Unfortunately, it's against you and you're my favourite presenter. The yellow number plate thing. So it's a legal thing, really. It's you're not allowed to show a white reflection at the rear of your car. Legally, so white has to be the front, and the reason yellow was chosen for the back is that's the next colour that the black numbers will stand out more proudly from.
No, I know, but why can't you have a yellow one on the front?
Because you have to show white to the front. You can't show any other light, any other colour light to the front.
Why not?
White. Well, it's legal, isn't it?
Yeah, and why is it? Why is that the law? So that you know what the front is and what the back is.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm not here to answer what the law is. I'm saying that that is what the reason is.
I am the law. This is Mystery Hour. I am the law. We knew that it was the law.
No,
the question
I'm the
was.
Law.
No, I'm the law. The question. The question was why? Why is that the law?
I don't know who makes that law, but you're not allowed to show a green light or blue light.
I know, and the reason is so that you know for sure whether a vehicle is coming towards you or going away. I'm going to give you a round of applause because I think you're a firefighter, and I do everything I can to support firefighters at every turn. But your steward's inquiry has been rejected.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Bye. Chris is in Hemfield. Back to Chris in Hemfield. Crikey, sorry, mate. I forgot all about you. Where were we? Do it as quickly as you can. When people say there are three possible answers, I've got to tell you, my heart sinks a little.
Okay, right. So basically, the beer bottle is flat because the seal's been broken.
Right.
So if you're quick enough,
yeah,
and it just gets a little bit frozen, the liquid won't expand and you won't break the seal.
So it's broken in a tiny way. It's not blown the lid off, but it's breached the sanctum of the seal.
There you go.
Yeah. Qualifications?
Engineer.
You sound
beer drinker.
You sound like you made up
and
engineer.
Regular,
a bit, no, hang on a minute.
Freezer.
Beer drinker, I believe. Engineer, you were yanking my chain, I think, sir. Have a round of applause. He's right. I think he must be because it's the expansion. It's just not on a big enough scale to blow the lid off. I blow the bloody doors off. It's just enough for gas to seep out. Basil, which means that you've got a flat beer, but because it's anyway. Basil's in St. Albans. Basil, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Basil.
Yeah, it's the birthday cake one.
Oh, good. Carry on.
So to understand the answer to that, you've got to understand why we put candles on birthday cakes as well.
Oh, go on.
Because back in ancient Greece, when people wanted their prayers to be heard by the gods, they would bake little cakes of bread, put a candle on there, light it, and at night they would leave it on the windowsill. So when the wind will blow out that candle, that smoke, which is symbolic, will carry their prayers up to the gods and be heard.
Well,
and that's
never.
Why when we have a birthday, we say, make a wish.
Wait, girl, you're good at this, aren't you, eh?
Sorry?
You're good at this.
I just know a lot of trivia.
Well, you call it. It's not trivia now, is it? It's on Mystery Hour. It doesn't get more important. Where did you read it? Can you remember? What are your qualifications?
I think it's a book by Peter Lawry, you know, Laws and Superstition, something like that.
It's a superb one, that. So, I mean, so it is an evolution of a previous superstition, in a way.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I haven't read any other theories regarding it, but...
you bake a cake to wish for something, like the candy. Oh, well, mate, it's a quality answer. Do you want a round of applause, Basil?
I think, as it's a first-time caller, yes, absolutely.
It was very richly deserved. Well played. I hate it when people take Mystery Hour seriously. It's just a bit of fun, you know. I'm not talking to Basil. I'm talking to the producer. She wants me to announce. She wants me to announce that the only answer we need now is the origins of the phrase, by the way, which I think I answered fairly. We've got all the other answers that we need. So everyone else, says the producer, can stand down unless you can answer the question about the origins of the phrase, by the way. It's 12:53. That's 6 minutes left, and you're encouraging me to turn callers away. That's very bold producing. Michael's in Tunbridge Wells. Michael, question or answer?
Here's a question.
Carry on, Michael. Oh, it's quick. Go on.
I've watched the budget speech for many years, and I've noticed that it's always the deputy speaker who's in the chair and not the speaker. I would have thought for an important thing like that, it would have been the speaker. So yeah. I'm not sure why that is.
No, nor am I. That's your question, is it?
Maybe Theo can answer it.
Theo's not allowed to. Well, he can ring in like everybody else does, but he doesn't. He's a political journalist, not a sort of constitutional trivia mine. We shall find out for you. Why is it always the deputy speaker who's in charge for the budget? There might be an obvious answer to that. It might just be a tradition that nobody knows the origins of. Either way, the number is the same: 0345 60 60 973. Yeah, I can see a little bit of a problem on the horizon. Bear with. Philip's in Woking. Philip, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's an answer to the saluting question.
Is it? Carry on.
Yes. So we actually last did this together in January.
Yeah,
and raising the visors. And then just to give a bit further on top of that for the chap who's asking about doffing the cap, the reason that the British Army does it with an open hand was to show back in the day that if you sent a messenger to go and parley or speak to somebody, that their hand was empty, there wasn't a knife or a blade or anything in there.
Oh, no, you're good. So the lifting of the visor is the generic origin, but the specific British military salute involves the open palm to demonstrate. I mean, you could have a knife in your left hand.
You could, but then your arm's pinned to the side, sort of at a position of attention.
It's a formal salute. It's not just a hand, is it? You've got to be stand to attention. So you heels together, arm by your side. Well, not heels together. No, sorry, you carry on.
Heels together. Toes at a 30-degree angle. I'm exceptionally dumb. I could go top to bottom if you wished.
It's a long time since I was the worst ever RAF cadet that Wing Commander Biddy had ever had the misfortune to encounter. And I quote him directly there, Philip. But it was. I thought it's heels together. It's all there.
It's 10 years since I was probably the worst cadet the Army ever had, but I'm still here now. So.
Round of applause for Philip. He's revealed his qualifications. I love that. Theo is in Leicester Square. Theo, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
The reason the Deputy Speaker is always in the chair at the House of Commons, in the House of Commons for the budget debate is because, as the Deputy Speaker, he is also the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, which is, of course, the committee that initiates proposals for raising taxation and budget. And the budget is always about taxation. And so, therefore, it is customary that the Deputy Speaker is in the chair and not the Speaker himself for the budget.
Qualifications?
Political journalist at LBC for 6 and a bit years. Political journalist for 10 years.
That's fair enough, I think. Yeah.
Is that all right? Does that allow it?
I'm just taking... Actually, someone else has got a question for you. Here you go. James is in Barnet. James, what would you like to ask the political editor?
I'd like to ask him, why do we call left-wingers and right-wingers? I do have a little suggestion, but I'm not sure what the answer is, really.
Theo, do you know?
No, I don't. Wait there. Let me just... I assume it's because... assume is never a good thing to do. Why are... Left wing. Give me 2 minutes, James.
No, you can't look stuff up. It's the only rule we have on Misery. It's to do with the French Parliament and the post-revolution French Parliament. I can't remember the details. At Gauche and Adouin.
The origins are in the French Revolution, James.
Yeah.
From 1789.
That's right. Yeah. Don't look stuff up, Theo. Theo, I can see through you like a window, mate. Do not look stuff up because we were about to do something quite special, and now you might have spoiled it.
Well, but have I spoiled it?
Well, in terms of someone comes on Mystery Hour and says maybe Theo could answer that, and then
I did the first one,
and then Theo pops up and answers it. You know what the crowds are thinking. You know what the audience is thinking at this point in proceedings. Does he or doesn't he get one of those?
Does he get one of what? Sorry,
I like this. I'm going to let Sheila Fogarty. The cameras aren't on, are they? Sheila, could you make like River Phoenix, Joaquin Phoenix in Gladiator, and do the thumb up or thumb down for Theo?
Always up for Theo.
Is it Theo, mate? This is for you.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
Hang on. How come I got to be the gladiator when it was, in fact, Caesar's wife that did that, wasn't it? Caesar? She used to give the nod, didn't she?
I think that was one
in
of the things.
In her elegant toga and beautiful long hair.
But in the film, with Russell Crowe, as opposed to in your actual history.
The bloke in the sandals.
I think it was Joaquin Phoenix. And a round of applause for Theo as well, Josh, if you would. And the answer, it was French revolutionaries, wasn't it? It was revolutionaries to the left, loyalists or royalists to the right, post-revolution. That's it. We've done the board. We've done it all. Look at all the people getting in touch. We didn't do by the way. Shall we ask quickly, Theo, Sheila, do you know?
Theo, Sheila, I have no idea where the origins of by the way.
Well, I think it's obvious. I think if you're on a road, the blackberries are by the way. So if you're telling a story and then you add something additional, it's by the way.
That's not obvious at all.
I'll take a round of applause for that. Thank you, Josh. Thank you very much. It's coming up to 12:59. As you may have gathered, Sheila Fogarty has entered the building. Yes. The Empress has arrived.
Yes.
We'll be doing it all again tomorrow morning from 10. Thanks for today. It was rather fun, wasn't it? And please remember that it might be a matter of life and death, and you might be desperate to get a test, but for God's sake, stop your endless carping.
And the Empress's thumb is firmly down when it comes to the government's response at the moment to this pandemic. Almost 2 million people in northeast of England will see more restrictions following a rise in coronavirus cases. Already 3 million or so are in a deeper lockdown than the rest of us in the northwest. Similar numbers in the West Midlands. So essentially half of England is in deeper lockdown than the rest of the country. The new measures include restrictions on household mixing and pubs closing earlier at night. Northumberland, Newcastle, Sunderland, North and South Tyneside, Gateshead and County Durham council areas will be affected from midnight tonight. The leader of Newcastle City Council joins me at 2:15 there or thereabouts. The London mayoral hopeful joins me as well. I'll ask him what he would do if London rates spike again. The Standard headlines are talking about curfews from 10 o'clock.
On your radio, on Global Player and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.